Secular literally means non-religious. That's what it means. If the state starts passing laws that quote-unquote respect your religion, then in some ways it's not secular anymore. Hello, hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Skeptics and Seekers Sunday Sermon. This is 4S. I'm David Johnson. Let's get started with Matt. How are you, Matthew? Matthew, do you say your first and last name? Do people know that, or are you an alias?
My name is so common. I wish people good luck if they want to find me using my name, because they'll find a stuntman, a weather presenter, various actors, politicians, and all sorts of long before they'll ever get to me. So. Let them have my full name. I dare you to find me.
Matthew Taylor. Just look for someone with BBC and never mind. Never mind. See, there was some pre-show. If you want to know the context.
Brazenly bold chuckle. Is that what it
yes,
stands for?
Yes, exactly what it stands for.
Okay. All right, then. No double entendre is intended.
I feel like this is partially my fault here. So we're going to get back on track. Rapidly, we have a couple of articles. Now, it is among all things possible that Brian with a Y shows up. He might. You know, Brian does what Brian does. He comes, he goes, he does his thing. And so... hopefully, he'll show up at some
point. Hello, Brian. You do your thing. I'll do mine. We'll be fine.
Excellent. So we're all doing our things now, and we're just going to get started.
Somebody should do a song about that.
No.
Doing your thing.
They should not. I can't tell you who to sock it to. So,
come on, be serious. What are we here for?
Actually is a serious article that I want to get to. That's not the one that Matt sent me. We're going to start with the one that Matt sent me first. And there's a little bit of background to that. You see, people send me articles from time to time that they would like me to do for shows.
And the reason why I sent you this article was I enjoy your viciously pin sharp sarcasm. I like to hear it. And I wanted to hear you rip this story apart with said viciously sharp sarcasm. And what do? You say, hey, I've got a better idea, Matthew. Let's talk about it together. And I'm like, no, that's not why I sent it to you.
Well, you see, you also have a viciously sharp wit about you. And this is a British story. And you are our resident real Brit, not my expat Brit who has no accent. That would be Clint. So
yeah, they're not real Brits, those people.
Right, so
yeah, we're trying to kick them out. We're trying to put them on boats to Rwanda at the moment. Yeah, they don't belong here.
Yeah, that Benedict Arnold. Anyway, we'll get to him sometime in the new year. But this is a British story. I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious.
Hysterical. It is bizarrely hysterical. Insane.
It's truly ridiculous, and I do believe in ridiculing the ridiculous, and we just need to point it out. Religion takes all shapes and forms, and it's everywhere in the world, and sometimes I get accused of picking low-hanging fruit in the Bible Belt, because that's what I know, and that's ridiculous. I actually get my news, my shorts, my daily shorts, from Christian news. And
this fruit hangs so low, the bottom of the barrel is 20 foot higher.
It's this is why we are doing this with Matthew, folks. You know, so it's not a true accusation. I talk about what Christians are talking about. But this is worldwide stuff. And I do try to pick stuff from around the world. From time to time, a lot of it is stuff that I don't want to talk about, but I go over a lot of that news. This is one piece, though, that if I had seen it, I would have done it immediately. But I realized that I really wanted some help doing this one, and someone else whose name I don't recall, and I didn't get permission to use their name, so I wouldn't use it anyway, sent me the other article that we're going to do. So this one is going to be fairly short, I think. The next one is going to take a little bit longer, and I think is requires a little bit more gravitas. And so I do have the wrong person for that one. But this one, maybe.
I don't know how to take this one seriously. Yeah. It deserves every bit of ridicule that we can possibly dig up and more.
Yeah. By the way, I don't have anyone with the proper gravitas to take the second one seriously. So we're going to muddle through. I'm going to begin this article, but I'm going to do very little of the reading because you guys know why at this point. Council rejects Jewish sects. Planning application that would finally allow them to travel on the London Underground. I just want you to think about the title for a moment. Let's not even get into the article just yet. Is there some law going on where Jews can't travel the tube? It's the tube, right?
The tube is what we colloquial call it here. It is the London Underground, the London Metro, if you want to use another language, another country's language. It's the same thing. We call it the tube because it's round tunnels underground.
Right.
Tube is a perfectly acceptable noun to use.
Right. I mean, that's something that you would see in the BBC. It's the tube. We're just going to leave it at that. Is there a law that prohibits Jews from
using it?
Yeah, because this title suggests
it, not in law, not in British law. If well, there is a law, it's not, it's a specifically religious self-imposed law.
Hang on, but this title, this
the title, shall title, I reread the title? The title,
yes.
Council rejects Jewish sects planning application that would finally allow them to travel on the London Underground. It will be a self-imposed law if there is any law.
Okay, well, this doesn't say anything about a self-imposition, and so shame on London for not allowing Jews to travel the tube.
Just a specific Jewish sect. Not all Jews, just this particular sect.
They're particularly annoying, are they? Let's find out. You know what? I got to tell you, as much as I want to thrash this story, I do have to just say, before getting too far into it, the Jews are going through a really tough time right now. That needs to be acknowledged. I have not done a proper show on that. I still feel like it's something that is unfolding, and we need to see what's going to come of all of this.
Yeah. Andrew and I have got some extended conversations about it on the Still Unbelievable feed, if people want to go and do that.
Tell them where to go find that.
Still Unbelievable. Pull it into your podcast catcher of choice and you'll find us. It's within the last five episodes that have gone up.
Okay.
Look for the bonus episodes. There's three of them.
Okay. So I just want to say that, I'm not trying to pile on, and I am certainly not anti-Jewish people. I am anti-Jewish religion. So I hope that doesn't make me an anti-Semite. So this may be awkward timing to do this story. I have done a couple of shorts featuring Judaism. That's part of the world religion, and I'm not going to not do Judaism because they're going through a particularly hard time right now. But I do want to acknowledge that the people of Jerusalem and Jews around the world are facing real difficulty, and we at 4S and adjacent properties recognize that.
Is true, and this is completely unrelated to that. As you said, the timing of this is just within the last few weeks. So the timing, whatever adjective you want to use, has happened that way, and it is self-imposed and completely unrelated to what's going on in other parts of the world.
Right. A council has rejected a multi-million-pound scheme from a Jewish religious sect that would have allowed its members to use the London Underground. That just seems like a restating of the title, and so I'm going to read the next paragraph. By the way, there is a rule that Brian and I established that we would not pause or interrupt in the middle of a paragraph. And we held to that rule, not at all.
I noticed.
I am going to try to do better this time.
He's not.
Here we go. In plans submitted to Chelsea, is that right?
Yes, Chelsea and Kensington.
Chelsea and Kensington's Council Planning Committee, a secondary roof would be installed at the entrance to South Kensington Station to create a degree of separation from the nearby Science Museum. Wait a minute. Jews aren't anti-science. Why would they need separation from the Science Museum? I don't understand. I don't understand why this article, we've read the title, we're two paragraphs in, and it really, really sounds, it sounds ridiculous. It either sounds like London is banning a sect of Jews from riding the tube, or that Jews are opposed to science. Neither one of these things are true. Perhaps your paragraph here, Matt, will shed some light.
If given permission by the council, this would have allowed members of the CONIM to use the station. They are currently unable to do so as the Science Museum contains human remains.
Oh, no. Tell me, does the underground have pathways that go under hospitals?
I expect so. Or cemeteries. I also expect so.
So I don't understand this part at all, really, because human remains are in a lot of places.
Yep. I'm sure there's very serious technicalities going on here.
Okay. A statement.
A statement submitted with the planning application said they, the CONIM, have special rules and guidelines on how to behave that still go on until this day in age. One of them is not to come in any shape or form in contact with a deceased. Exceptions are made for the immediate family because we know there's always exceptions. Even not being under one roof.
Okay, stop. Okay, first of all, have you ever heard of the CONIM?
The name is familiar, but I know very little about it. Well, was I supposed to look them up? And there are various Jewish areas within London, and there are various Jewish communities within London. The one that most obviously springs to mind, who I'm familiar with in London, is they tend to wear heavy dark coats and always wear a hat, and they've got very curly sideburns. I don't know if they're genuine hair grown and then curled, or whether it's stick-on. I don't know if that's the right word, but I don't know if that is a CONIM sect or not.
It sounds like you're just describing Orthodox Jews.
Potentially, yeah.
You see a lot of that in New York. These are the only people in America that can get away with the fashion statement of wearing a full-on magician's top hat.
Yeah.
In their daily attire. And they make it work. I don't think I could pull it off. I'm just wondering, the reason there's no homework. The reason I was asking that, I was just trying to figure out how widespread this sect of Jews is, because I have not heard of them. I wonder how many of the audience members have heard of them, and if you have some knowledge to drop on them that you didn't scan from Wikipedia. let me know, skepticsandseekers.squarespace.com. Log in your discuss account, discuss away, or you can send me an email at skepticsandseekers@gmail.com. Matt, do you have an email that people can send you?
Reasonpress@gmail.com.
call.
Send all insults and hate mail to there. You know, I'll ignore it like I do every other email.
Yeah, that's my official hate mail inbox. So reason for us, make sure you say attention, Matt, if you want to send me hate mail.
I will proofread it and make sure there's suitable English words inserted and then send it on to David.
So, I just lost the sound of my own voice, and I really can't do this if I can't hear myself. You understand, right? Actually, the sound of my voice goes with the sound of Matt's voice.
So too. Anyway, we were talking about the roof.
Yeah, and more specifically, the Koanam. I just want to add this just as a point of theology, just a small point of theology. There are many sects of the Jews today, most of which you have probably never heard of. There are Messianic Jews. Those are Jews that I think most Christians have heard of. They're Jews, but they're Christian-ish adjacent, mostly Jews. And in some ways, all Jews are Messianic Jews. They're just not Jesus Messianic Jews. So there's a sect that way. I've participated in that sect once upon a time, which was a very interesting experience. But the reason I'm pointing this out, that there are a number of sects of Jews today, this was also true back in the first century. So back in the times, in the events of Jesus and so forth, there were many sects of the Jews. And if you go back even further, back into the time of Isaiah and Jeremiah the prophets, there were different sects of Jews. They were not all the same. The Jews have never been a monolithic religion. Just has never been that. The Jews that kind of broke away and became Jesus Jews, they were considered, at the time, just another Jewish cult, a sect of Jews. And that's how they were known for a very, very long time. So don't just assume that you understand how Judaism was syncretized into Christianity and that these Christians were Jews in the order of the Jews that were written about in the Old Testament. They were not. They were probably more like the Koanim. Say it for me. The Koanim. The Koanim. They were probably more like that. And they had some very strange fetishes like the Koanim as well. And so the Koanim are probably the closest example we get to something like what Jesus Jews were in the first century. And we would consider them very marginal and not worth looking at, which is how most of the world considered them too, for a very long time. All right, you can go ahead. I just wanted to throw in a little bit of history and theology and things that people are going to disagree with. So it was a good time to send the hate mail addresses. All right. I will allow you to continue, sir.
Right. The museum shares the same roof as the underground, as in the station that we mentioned earlier, Chelsea and Kensington. The museum shares the same roof as the underground, meaning that the Koanim cannot use the whole underground line that runs past or connects to that entrance, as it is associated with a dead body. The planning statement said that the proposed secondary roof would break up the one roof phenomenon, and it will allow those deprived from using the great service called the underground to be able to use it.
Okay, hang on. The planning statement said, now, the people in this planning committee, I assume these are part of the
Koanim. Yes, so this would be the planning submission, the planning statement submitted to the council by the Jewish sect.
Okay, so the Jewish sect, it just sounds like they're making shit up here. They've got this rule that says you can't be in any way in contact with a dead body.
Can't be under the same roof as
the same roof. So You put,
unless you're related to them.
So you put a second roof there, and then that breaks it up.
Yeah.
Right. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're still under the roof.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you put another roof under the roof. You're under the roof.
Technicalities. You know, that's why they can set up gadgets to turn on light switches on the Sabbath, because they're not doing the light switch. They're doing the gadget, which is a get out clause. It's a technicality.
I would say that all religion have these kinds of technicalities. But this seems like a particularly thin one. I mean, even the people in the Qanon sect, why does that sound so much like QAnon? Even the people in the Qanon, let's make it a synonym, Qanon. Even the people in the Qanon sect have to be scratching their head and thinking, is that really right? Is that okay? Because, I mean, you could say that wearing your tall hat is a buffer between you and the roof.
Yep.
So
maybe if they changed the design of the hats to make it look like a peaked roof or something like that.
You wouldn't even have to do that, because the train itself has a roof.
Good point.
And so you're already under a secondary roof.
Here's another idea, and because I'm vaguely familiar with that era of London. Area of London. I've worked actually in one of the museums in that area of London. And it's not a very long walk to another underground station that's on the same line. Literally within 5 minutes, you can walk to another station. Go into that station, which doesn't share a roof with the Dead Body Museum, and then get on a train there. But because this roof connects to multiple underground stations via a train line, apparently that disqualifies them from using the entire area of that part of the underground. They can come up with a technicality that gets them out of that.
I don't understand their technicality. First of all, I don't even understand I don't understand why they need one, but never mind that. The technicality that they've chosen just seems ridiculous, because once again, if you're in a subway, you Americans, it's just a subway, okay? If you're in a subway,
it's underground.
So are most of New York subways. Actually, some of them go above ground by quite a few stories. But if you're in there, you're in something with a roof. It's a roof. So I don't under. It's not like you're walking under the tunnels and there's only the one roof. So this one just doesn't make any sense. And the committee who is deciding what the workaround would be, did none of them say, "Hey, wait a minute, aren't we already under a secondary roof?" And maybe the problem is going underground and waiting for the subway. So maybe while you're on the subway, it's okay. But just waiting in the tunnel, then you would only be under one roof. I don't know. And where does this rule come from? I did not look this up in the Bible, because this did not seem worth research to me, to be quite honest. But why would that matter if there was some mystical thing in the Bible that said something about you can't be under the same roof?
Is there something about being unclean if you're close to a dead body or something like that?
Okay, sure, but I'm not entirely
being under the same roof surely must count as being. I'm trying to grant them some slack. I realize it's tenuous. I get it, but just try and flow with me just for a couple of minutes. Less than that. They're in close proximity to an unrelated dead body. That makes them
as they are when unclean. They as they are when they walk past a hospital. When they walk into a hospital, they are under the same roof as dead bodies. So I don't understand.
Stop being logical.
Okay. All right. But so let's say that there's some ancient law that says you can't be under the roof of dead bodies. So
what? Most Jews, most Orthodox Jews, have found ways, kind of like most Christians, have found ways to get around stuff that Jesus said. Most Jews have gotten around ways to kind of ignore some of the crazier things that Moses, let's just say there's real Moses, things that Moses said. As an example, you're supposed to take your disobedient kid to the elders, and they're supposed to stone him to death. Now, Jews don't do that. They don't do it. The command to do it is clear. It's not shrouded in mystical language. It is what it is and seems to mean exactly what it says, and yet they don't do that. There are other commands in the Torah that require you to literally murder your kid with the help of the community if they bring to you, you know, word of other gods and suggest that maybe you should try them. So if your daughter went to college in India or someplace and said, hey, you know what? Hinduism, you know, that's an interesting thing, an interesting exercise. Let me tell you about the good news of Ganesh. You're not even supposed to listen. You don't even hear him out. Take a brick and take it upside their head and then carry them out and have other people do the same. That's biblical law. And they don't do it. So why the hell would it matter if there was some law that said you can't go near a dead body? Because they are already, even this sect, they are already being subjective about what laws they will and won't do.
Yeah.
So this doesn't make sense. What this feels like to me is an easy way to get some points for being religious, right? I'm religious. I have this special restriction. I don't eat shrimp, and I won't ride your underground tunnel. And you must recognize my religiosity. Now, they do that, but none of them are killing their kids that are drunk and on drugs. So if I were the city, I would say, before you bring me this proposal, one of you is going to have to kill your drunken kid. So, which is maybe why I am not in parliament. Also, I'm not British. So look, I will let you take it away from there. But this is, you know, when I read this story, so many thoughts just flooded my mind here. So many ways that this doesn't make sense. And the only thing that does make sense is this is just performative religion that nobody should respect. Nobody.
Yeah.
Not even Jews. Yeah.
And the hyper-cynical part of me wonders if the obvious denial of this is going to be used as evidence of persecution.
Oh, yeah. Look, the thing yes, this is true about Jews. And it's true about Christians in the States. They love easy persecution. There's a difference between easy persecution and real persecution. If they don't let me say my prayer over the intercom in an elementary school, that's easy persecution. You can go out and say, look, you see how they're suppressing Christianity? Well, I'm going to do it anyway. Because there are no consequences you're going to face. That's easy persecution. And so, of course, this sect of Jews is going to, you know, campaign to their sect. You see how they're trying to suppress our religion.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, and I know people say that, I mean, this goes against skeptic ideals as well, so I'm not skepticking well. I'm okay with suppressing your religion. Your fucking religion is not the stuff that laws are made of. So I don't. No. This is a secular society. And if your religion runs afoul of good secular law, then fuck your religion. Find a workaround like you do for not killing your goddamn kid. That's what you do. You don't appeal to the state to change their rules to respect your goddamn stupid religion. Because it's not based on your goddamn stupid religion. No. Secular literally means non-religious. That's what it means. If the state starts passing laws that quote-unquote respect your religion, then in some ways it's not secular anymore.
Yeah. And this gets to the next paragraph shows where this is religion trying to force its way into a secular society. So, and this also takes a very weird turn, this next paragraph, but it helps to paint the perspective and the picture of how ridiculous this whole thing is. The following words would be etched into the structure at eye level. They would say, a Kohen. Now, a Kohen is different to what I was talking about earlier, the Kohenim. A Kohen is a person of priestly lineage. A Kohen is forbidden to allow himself to be contaminated with negative spiritual forces, such as those emanating from a corpse. One of the ways these forces being transmitted is by being under the same roof as the corpse, and therefore a Kohen must avoid entering any covered area containing one. Science Museum has several body parts which fall within this category, and therefore a Kohen cannot enter the museum. However, any protrusions on the outside of the building which are connected to the covered area of the museum can carry and extend the negative spirit and can prevent a Kohen accessing not only this station, but any underground station, as they all connect to each other.
Okay.
The device attached to the doorway breaks the connection from the museum, thereby permitting a Kohen to enter the station. So there you go. They want a magical roof which stops the transmission of evil spirits.
This is okay.
Sorry, I can't keep it anymore.
I know that you were in a role. I was trying to stop you because I couldn't take it anymore.
I didn't get to that bit.
I wanted to stop this train in the middle of the first paragraph. Yeah, right. It's the following words must be etched at eye level, mind you. So, by the way, eye level. Who's eye? How tall is that person?
What they need is a little magic wand, and as they walk along, they can go Spiritus Expelliarmus.
A Kohen is. I'm trying to get what they were trying to put on the sign here. A Kohen is
no spiritual lineage
forbidden to allow him to become. They want to put this whole on the sign? What is the sign supposed to say exactly? I'm trying to work through that.
Who's actually going to stop and read that? I'll say walk through into the station. I mean, the whole point of an underground station entrance is to allow the maximum volume of people to go through to get to the underground stations in the shorter period of time as possible. You don't want a queue of people to read this poxy little sign on the way to get to work in the morning. They just want to grab their cup of joe and go through the doorway as quickly as possible with 40,000 other people at the same time.
They would say a Kohen, a person of... It sounds like they want to put a Wikipedia entry on the sign. What if they made the sign and for whatever reason, you know, maybe there's some, you know, electrical ducting going on there. They had to move it a little higher.
If
they did all of the things, they built the second roof, they put the sign there, but it was 6 inches too high. Yeah. Would that be a problem?
Who's eye level?
I don't understand. Any of this. This sounds like truly wackadoo. Is it okay to say batshit crazy? Wackadoo.
You need something a bit stronger than that. You're still at the pale end of this thing. You need to go deeper.
I don't understand. This is straight up witchcraft. That's what this feels like, because you've got You've got this special roof to ward off evil spirits, and you've got this special sign. By the way, does this have to be in a particular language, this sign? Are we doing Sanskrit? What are we doing?
What if the evil spirits coming out of the dead body can't read the sign?
None of this sounds like even Orthodox Judaism, which itself is a little wackadoo.
So it sounds like Fundy Christian.
It really does. And it becomes hard to distinguish a fundamentalist, I'll just say religionist, from someone who is a practitioner of witchcraft. At a certain level, it's indistinguishable. And this, I think even practicing witches would say, man, that's crazy. So it's evil spirits, but it's only a certain kind of evil spirit that they're worried about.
Emanating from a dead body, which begs a question to me. How full is a body of these kinds of spirits? You know, does the act of living fill you up with these evil spirits, and then it takes time for them to emanate from you? Because let's remember, we're talking about a museum here. The bodies in these museums could be multiple thousands of years old. You know, we're not talking freshly dead people. We're talking mummies. You know, we're talking dead bodies of historic interest that are considered to be appropriate to put in the museum, mm-hmm. not ones that have a bit of ick factor because of, you know what happens with right. flesh when it rots. So was he so full of evil spirits that they're still coming out? I mean, what's the flow rate here?
I don't know. And aren't there all kinds of evil spirits in the world? I mean, if you believe in this particular evil spirit, you would probably have to believe in lots of evil spirits. And if this evil spirit lives in dead bodies, what about the evil spirits that are in houses or certain types of wood or in living people? Do you have any special rituals for them? Or is it just this particular kind of evil spirit in this particular kind of place so that you can make a political statement about your religiosity? Because it sounds like all of this is just a way of highlighting the religiosity in a very easy and public and visible way. Because if this was really about warding off all evil spirits, they would have something better than this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to take the next paragraph here because it's short. There were a number of objections to the proposal, with locals claiming the inharmonious design of the secondary roof and that it was an alien addition to the grade 2 listed building. I don't understand any of those words, but they're all right, hilarious. So to me.
In the UK, certain buildings have what's called a grade listing.
Okay.
So buildings that are of a particular age and a particular level of historic and sociological interest get a listing status. And what the listing status means is there is a particular care you need to take over the building. You can't change the way the building looks. You can't change the doorways. You can't change the windows. The building needs to forever look as it always has looked. You can't do significant changes to it.
So kind of like what we would call a historic yes. property. Yeah.
Yes.
We have that here too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't have old buildings. I mean, we're talking buildings that are multiple hundreds of years old. Your country isn't even that old.
Yeah, which is weird how we have buildings that old. It was the evil spirits. They started the buildings.
They age faster. That's what it is.
They really do. So this seems
Sorry, my
like
my dog's going mental in the background. I think my brother's arriving at my house for Christmas.
Oh, okay. Does that mean you have to go?
It means my time is now beginning to tick away.
Okay. Let's
finish this one anyway.
Sure. About this, though, this seems like a thin objection to the rule, frankly, because you could just design a roof in a way that would fit in. There are things that, with our historic buildings, there are things that you can do, for additions or structure or things like that would still fit in with the the strictures of historic buildings. And so it seems like if they had actually wanted to do this, there are ways that they could have come up with it. But to say, yeah, this is an alien design to the building, and so we're not going to do it. What they really should have said, because they've just opened the door for more debate, what they really should have said is, we don't need to honor your religion. And that's what places really need to say. Everyone is afraid to say that. And if that just is said at a state level, you can have your religion. We're not going to interfere with your religion, but we're also not beholden to it. And so you can't appeal to the state to make your religion more palatable. Anyway, go ahead.
I agree with you on that point. We should be able to be free to say, this is superstitious claptrap, be gone with you. But because it's council, because it's official, because it's a form of local government, they need to have some technicality in which they can reject it. They can't just go namby-pamby, piss off. So there is that. And yes, you are right to an extent that an appropriate roof which fitted in with the period of the building using similar tradecraft could potentially be designed onto that, but that would still rule out things like the etching on, because that would not fit in with that. So it would kind of work, but it would still look weird because it wouldn't be contemporary to the original design of the building.
Right, but I mean, they didn't say what size font that incantation had to be. So, I'm just saying.
They get a QR code so you can do it with your modern technology.
Right. Okay. Go ahead and finish this story, because you are time limited and we don't have that much more to go. I do want to touch on the next story, even if we can't fully cover it.
Okay. The Knightsbridge Association. So this will be some kind of housing association to this area of London. The Knightsbridge Association, the proposal was incongruous and out of keeping with the listed aspects of the original entrance to the tunnel, referring to the underground. It added that the archway appeared to block part of the public highway. So it obviously protruded out from the building and would have then become an obstruction to people passing by. Council planners rejected the proposal, citing the size, design and position of a secondary roof and the irreparable harm it would cause to the Grade 2 listed building. It added that the public benefits would not outweigh the harm. According to the Science Museum website, it has 4,351 human remains from various different countries, including skeletal material, mummies, artifacts incorporating remains, and slides containing human tissues.
Okay.
I think that is
it. So yeah, I at risk of repeating myself with limited time, this is all very problematic to me from the government point of view. Because if we just ask ourselves hypothetically, okay, well, what if all of those things weren't the case? What if this wasn't, you know, a Grade 2 building? What if it was something else where those particular excuses wouldn't apply? Then would you do it? And the answer is no. The answer is no.
I hope so.
Right. It should be no. And that's why I say these reasons are bad on the whole, because they don't actually get at the real answer, which is, we are not a religious state. We are a secular government, and we do not appeal to those types of requests. Yes. That's the only answer, because the next time they might ask something similar about a hospital. And then you've got to come up with another lie. And the real truth, we never really get at that here. And so that's kind of what gets my goat about that. And so the focus that I have on this, the one serious focus that I have from this, is how much, it's a question, how much do we as a secular society, as a body politic, have to honor the religious beliefs of the people in that society?
Yes. And that's right. And I would hope that if I was on this kind of level, I would say exactly that. I'll take one look at it and go, this would be a ruling that would be exclusively beneficial to a particular sect of a particular religion. That cannot be allowed in a secular society. Rejected.
Right.
End of. Do not take it any seriously. Do not entertain their discussion.
Right. There has to be something that sets the precedent for that, because this request can just pop up again and again and again.
Yeah.
You know, in different circumstances. Let's do a speed read through a story that I do think is quite serious. And I want to get through the article so that if we have to lose you and, you know, maybe Brian will step in, I can, you know, I can continue to talk about this because... and this one was sent by a listener. You can send me articles, folks, skepticsandseekers@gmail.com. You can also drop it on the website. Anywhere on the website, I will see it. I promise. So this is from the BBC. UCKG. What does that stand for, by the way?
I think it's United Universal Church of the Kingdom of God. So written, the title, the name itself rings alarm bells already.
Yes. Okay. So the UCKG church pastor tells boy, evil spirits hide in him. First of all, church pastor, how do you know that? What tool did you use to discern an evil spirit from something else? Trust me, this does tie into the first theme, but in a different way. So I will get to that toward the end. Matt, you are a far superior reader than me, so I'm going to lean on you here.
Before I do any reading, this is from BBC Panorama. Now, BBC Panorama do short-form investigatory documentaries here in the UK on a range and a variety of topics. So what they did here was a journalist went investigating this particular church, spent time at the church, spent time interviewing the church, spent time in services at the church. And there was hidden camera footage and hidden microphone recordings of conversations in this. And if you've got access to the BBC iPlayer website or app, and you've got access to view any of the content, the 30-minute or thereabouts panorama investigation of this story is available to watch, and I do recommend it. I watched it. I was quite horrified watching. My wife and I watched it together, and we were both equally horrified. Remember, my wife is a Christian. We were both equally horrified by the content of this documentary, the things that this church allegedly is guilty of. Let's drop the allegedly. And the things that people were reporting about this church. And it wasn't just about this particular boy that has grabbed the headline because of the gay, inverted commas, agenda, yawn. There are other serious issues going on in this church about coercion, money, requests for money, mega rich pastors, mega rich church leadership, and lack of access to any kind of help to other people in the church.
Right. And I just did a very long piece. It was over 5,000 words. You can find it on the site, on Real Christianity. And it was called Counterfeit. I did a show about Counterfeit.
Good one. That was saved. I enjoyed listening to that one.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you had a chance to listen to that, where I again asked the question, you know, what should be considered real Christianity? Because when I look at these stories, I go through it, I think, that's weird. But who am I to say that's not real Christianity? Because I don't see other Christians standing up against this stuff. And so at some level, it's close enough to Christianity so that they say, well, we can't say anything about it. I mean, it's legit. Does anything go really? What should we consider as legitimate religion, and where should the state step in to interactively stop some things in the name of religion? So in the first article, we have the question, how much should the state, how much do they care about, you know, someone's particular religious desires or preference? And in this one, at what point should the state stand up and say, religion be damned, you can't do that? Matt, take it away.
Right. So the article is by a journalist called Katie Mark. A UK branch of the Christian church has been secretly filmed trying to cast out evil spirits from a 16-year-old. A Universal Church of the Kingdom of God pastor was seen reciting what looked like so-called strong prayers to rid the boy of a demon. Now, the difference between strong prayers and not strong prayers is made in the documentary, so I do recommend that you watch it. BBC Panorama was also told by a gay ex-member he was given strong prayers at 13 to try to make him straight. Now, strong prayers are supposedly not given to anybody who is legally a child. So there is a distinction here between strong prayers and not strong prayers. And strong prayers should only be done to a person of a particular age, somebody who would be considered an adult in the UK. So this is breaking some kind of child protection rules. The UK CG says under 18s are not allowed into strong prayer services and it does not perform conversion therapy. The BBC Panorama of Investigation has found the church tells its congregation it can help with mental health conditions by casting out evil spirits. The leader of the church in the UK described epilepsy as a spiritual problem.
Okay.
And there again, recording of this in the Panorama investigation that I've been telling you about of that particular point.
Right. So let me just interject here. This is one of these places where I think it's the law of the land should, in fact, usurp any religious law or practice. Mental health issues or any other health issues should be dealt with first and foremost by health professionals. And if you have someone in your care, because you're some kind of authority figure, as these religious people are, and you believe that they have a mental health issue, but you do not refer them to mental health professionals and use your magic instead of that recommendation, you should be fined, jailed, your church should be shut down. That should, at the very least, be considered illegal in every law of every free secular country. You cannot do that. People who walk in with a, you know, a heart condition and they feel like they're having a heart attack and you don't take them to the hospital, but you take them to the witch doctor who then performs some kind of strong prayer thing and that person dies, you should be guilty of at least some type of degree of manslaughter here.
Yeah.
This is where I know that Christians are saying, and some skeptics too, well, I mean, but it's freedom of religion and this is a part of their, fuck your religion. This is not a religious state. We do have laws here to protect people, children, in various situations. Your religion is not a license for you to do just anything. And I am sick and tired of secular states bowing to the pressure of religion, and they're too afraid to make laws, rational laws, to protect their people. This is one of those situations that pisses me off so much because this is not just this story and this boy in this place. This is everywhere. This is real Christianity. This is boots on the ground, butts in the pews, fucking Christianity. And something needs to be done about at least this aspect of it. I am so sorry to take that much time because I wasn't intending to. I was going to say something frivolous like strong prayers. If you are calling your prayers strong prayers,
it's
what does that say about the other?
A euphemism, let's
right.
be honest.
But what does that say about the other prayers? All right.
God doesn't listen to the other prayers.
Right. They're not strong. Anyway, fuck
but
these people.
On that quick subject, quick plug, you and I and the Andrew as well had a conversation which involved talking about deliverance and this kind of prayer for evil spirits. That conversation, we recorded it crumbs years ago now. That's coming out in January. Just on the Still Unbelievable feed. That will be there. You'll have forgotten what it was all about. You'll enjoy listening to it again by the time that comes out.
I will. So thus is the big difference between Still Unbelievable and Skeptics and Seekers for Us. When I do a show, warts and all, it's coming out in a couple of hours.
Matthew sits on it, polishes it up, edits it to death, adds a few sound effects, polishes a bit more, and then eventually, oh, I might as well make this public now. Right. The UK CG Church has branches around the world, including 35 in the UK, where it is registered as a charity. It says it has more than 10,000 members across the country and describes itself as a Christian Pentecostal church. Prayers to cast out evil spirits are not unusual in the Christian world. Some churches call them deliverance or exorcisms, although the latter is not a term the UCKG uses. Dr. Joe Aldred, a Pentecostal bishop who works to bring together different Christian traditions, says, Christians believe, I believe, there are forces for good and evil in the world. Strong prayers in the UCKG usually involve a pastor laying on hands on a member of the congregation and demanding an evil spirit leaves their body. The church says it conducts the prayers at so-called spiritual cleansing services each week to remove the root cause of the problems. UKCG came under scrutiny following the murder of 8-year-old Victoria Kilimbe, who was murdered by her great aunt and the woman's boyfriend. Now, this I need to talk about. People in the UK will be very, very familiar with the name Victoria Kilimbe. This is a story that's about a decade old, possibly a bit more. And it was a young child, 8 years old, it said here. And she, I think she was brought to the UK from possibly Nigeria, my memory's telling me, but it was from a sub-Saharan African country, and came to the UK and lived not with her parents, but with family members. It says here, great aunts here in the UK. And they were part of a church. I didn't realize until I watched this Panorama documentary, because I do, that they were connected to this very same church that we're discussing here, the UCKG. And this is an event, remember, this is an event that's a decade old that they're referencing here. Mm. So the church has still not been shut down.
Wow.
And this girl, Victoria Kilimbe, was prayed over in this similar way, and that prayer went to such a drastic state that she was beaten at home by the great aunt, beaten to a point where she was killed by those beatings. An 8-year-old girl subjected to spiritual and physical abuse under the guidance of a church. This is the trauma here. This is the crime here. This is a bit that makes me seethe. This is a bit that makes me wish that this entire church was expelled from the UK without any consideration. Just kick them out. And that should have been done 10 years ago at the outcome of this Victoria case. But they're still allowed to continue, and they're still allowed to oppress people.
So I know of, I've had some experience with people who have suffered from, you know, this hyper Pentecostal type thing and exorcism, because that it, you know, exorcisms are scattered throughout the Christian tradition. Catholics are probably most known for that. They can get quite physical. Because, you know, someone might be asking, how could something go so far that it would kill? So they can get quite physical. They can also heighten, you know, one's body chemistry, blood pressure, heart rate, things like that, to dangerous levels as well. And so if you've got someone who is marginalized health-wise, these things can go way overboard there too. They're very dangerous. And, you know, for me, I don't, you know, first take them to a doctor.
Yeah.
But I have no problem with you praying over a person. You know, you can pray for them on the way to the doctor. You can't pummel them or do anything physically violent to them. But what I don't understand about these types of strong prayers, and for that matter, exorcisms, I do love a good exorcism moving. What I don't understand is why a person can't just calmly, you know, in the face of a demon, calmly and piously pray to God and ask him to remove the demon and let that be. Why, yep. Why do you need to ask 2 times, 10 times? Why do you have to do it for 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Why do you need all of the holy water and the Bible and the crosses and the theatrics? Does God not see the demon there? Does God not see your piety? Does God not hear your simple prayer? Please, Lord, remove this person, free this person from this demonic possession. Why isn't that a one-and-done kind of thing? I don't understand that at all. And I think if your religion can't explain that, you know, never mind state intervention, you should have no members at this point. And so I would really love to hear some description of why an exorcism has to go through all of these theatrics, and it can't just be a simple request to remove a demon.
Yeah, quite. Go ahead. The week before her death in 2000, so 23 years ago, I was a bit out of my timing there, the couple had taken Victoria, who was showing signs of abuse, to a branch of the church. Pastor said he thought she could be possessed and initially suggested she be taken to a service where strong prayers were performed. Later, before the service took place, the pastor told the great aunt to take Victoria to hospital. Charity Commission report highlighted that the seriousness of Victoria's condition was not fully realised or reported to the relevant authorities in the days before she died. It said it was concerned the church did not have a formal child protection policy. Following this criticism, the church introduced a safeguarding policy. Now it promises not to perform strong prayers to anyone under 18 or in their presence. BBC Panorama visited a UCKG youth group service in Brixton, South London, attended by young adults and teenagers.
Okay. There's more to this story. I'm looking
We need to the end of this article, and then we can wrap up, and I need to move on. Sorry,
okay.
David.
Go ahead. I was just wondering if we needed to cut it off there for you.
We can finish off. We've got time.
Okay, go ahead.
The undercover filming shows the pastor splitting up the group according to age. A boy who told the undercover reporter he was 16 at the time is seen receiving what looks like strong prayers from the pastor. My God, let your fire burn the evil spirit that hides, says the pastor. The boy's head is held by the pastor, who then prays for the evil spirit that has entered the boy to leave. The BBC showed the filming to Yaheen Davis, who sits on an independent government child safeguarding review panel. She says, given that the death of Victoria Klimbe occurred over two decades ago, based on the footage you've shared, UCKG may want to ask themselves how much they have learned. Safeguarding policies are one thing, but they mean nothing if they're not being implemented. They're meaningless. In a statement, UCKG said strong prayers are mainly performed at deliverance-specific services and anyone under the age of 18 is not allowed in. It said it strongly rejects the suggestion it has breached its safeguarding policy.
Right. So, I'm just going to try
to... There's a lot more to this article. Sorry, can we stop there?
We're going to stop there. I'm going to going to make a closing statement, and I'll ask you to do the same, and then we'll get out of here. I'm sorry, audience, that we couldn't finish this article, but I will link it here so that you can.
If this needs to be recovered, we can visit it again, David, and reschedule.
Good. Folks, Christians, especially Christians, I don't mind you being Christians, okay? I want Christian to become marginalized so that no one takes it seriously as a way to order their lives. But you can believe anything you want to. You can believe there are demons around every corner. You can believe that hospitals are haunted with special ghosts. I don't care what you believe. However, you have to also recognize that you are in a secular state. The state is not a religious state. If you want the state to be religious in that it's making it easier, it's making laws that allow your special religious things to happen, it's not secular anymore. It's religious. And a religious state is called a theocracy. You really have to think very long and hard about the kind of theocracy that you want, because we kind of have de facto theocracies in America, little theocracies. Here, these types of stories should give you a wake-up call. Is this actually the state you want that allows this kind of thing? Can there be a type of Christianity where you agree with me and come alongside me and say that religions, like any other business, needs to be regulate it? Right now, Britain is busy regulating American tech companies. Because honestly, the horror of someone messaging with a green bubble. In the meantime, religious abuses like this go untouched because we are afraid to say that there are some things that religion can't do. That has to change. And that's my serious plea. I think that's a conversation that needs to be had. And I know that the idea of regulating religion scares the hell out of Christians and out of some skeptics. But honestly, it's just a business and it has to be regulated. That's the beginning of this conversation. Matt, you may use the balance of your time to tell me why I'm an idiot. But because I assure you,
you might be slightly less than perfectly right, but you're definitely not an idiot.
Okay.
I do care what people believe in their religion, because people like Victoria Kimbe die as a result of those beliefs. And I think we should be highly prejudiced against beliefs that do that, and we shouldn't give them any slack. And I hold by what I said earlier. This church should have been expelled from the UK immediately after that. There should have been no quarter given. It doesn't have enough members to really survive. 10,000 members, apparently, in the UK. It's one of the smaller churches in the UK. You know, they don't deserve any kind of sympathy whatsoever. This should be a red line event 20 years ago, and they should have been kicked out of the UK. The other thing that I want to pick up on, because it's technicality and non-UK listeners might not realise this, they mentioned that the church is a charity, has charitable status. Most churches in the UK, in fact, it's probably all churches, I suspect, in the UK have charitable status. And there's a very good reason for that. It's basically for tax. So I'm a taxpayer here in the UK. If I make a donation to any charitable organisation, let's say I donate £100 to a charitable organisation in the UK, on that charity donation form, there's a box I can tick that says claim back tax. So I donate £100 to this charity. I tick that tax box. And what it is the charity then goes to the government and says, I want the tax that Matthew has paid on that £100. And the government will give the tax that I paid on that £100 to the charity. So they get my donation of £100 gets extra, say £30 extra for the tax that I paid on that from my income. And that is the benefit of being a charity in the UK. And when that benefit came out in the UK, however long it was, all the churches in the UK jumped on the charity bandwagon and started registering as charities. So now all the donations that they get, they then go to the government and say, can I have the tax on these donations that have been paid to us by taxpayers? And so all the donations that go to churches get a boosted income from the government from the tax that was paid on that money by the taxpayers. So that's why churches are tax status, are charity status here in the UK.
Right.
And I think that's wrong. I think that is fundamentally wrong.
It's the same in America, too. It's the same here as well. But you see, the thing is, charities are regulated. There are regulations.
There are very strict rules over charities. And for some reason, these rules don't extend to religious organizations that claim charity status.
Right. And that is the problem, because churches are businesses in every way. Nonprofit corporations are still corporations.
Yeah.
And
my wife works for a charity that is, it's a mentoring charity. So where people who need, young people, teenagers, need additional adult support in their day-to-day life. They can be paired with a vetted adult who will commit a two-year period to building an appropriate, mature relationship with that teenager just to help them cope with the everydays of life. It's a brilliant charity. It's doing lots of great work here in the UK. If they were guilty of that Victoria Kimbe case, the charity would have been shut down. I can pretty much guarantee it, because they have not met their basic requirement of providing a safe space for a child.
I would love to do an entire show just to talk about that charity. I love that idea, and I have some ideas of discussion already there. I just want to push back on one other thing. It's not small, actually. It's big to me, and this is the time to say it, so I'll say it quickly. In the story, you see, that there were, quote-unquote, policies in place to protect children. Children become adults. And it's, we can we can kind of get in a foot in the door if we say, well, it's for the children. You know, think of the children. But religious abuses hurt more than children. And I don't think that we should stop thinking of them and protecting them just because they turned 18. We should be protecting people of every age. We need to protect seniors from people that take advantage of them financially. We need to protect young, strong people who happen to might have, you know, maybe a mental illness and that people are taking advantage of them because of that. We need to protect everybody. And so the whole thing of, well, you know, at least there were some regulations for the children is meaningless if what you're saying is, oh, but you can do whatever you want to the adults. That's that is not true. And once again, there's no corporation, nonprofit or otherwise, that can get away with that sort of thing because there are serious regulations for corporations, and there should be. The church is a corporation. And even those that choose to order themselves as not a corporation are still subject to the law. And I just want to have to start some serious conversation and some serious thought process about how religion, not big tech, screw big tech, how religion can be reined in. Because where religion does good, it's very good. Where religion does harm, it's very harmful. And at the moment, the law has nothing to say about those things. And it's just wrong. I'm done. Matt, remind people of where they can get in touch with you, your website, your shows, your email address.
Search your podcast catcher for Still Unbelievable. You'll find myself and Andrew whining away about all sorts of stuff. I'm trying to get an episode ready that will be up ready for Christmas. Before Christmas Day, sometime between now and Christmas Day, there will be a new episode coming up, I hope. Reasonpress@gmail.com if you want to send hate mail to myself and Andrew because of all the lovely things that we say and don't say. And finally, if you're a Christian who somehow manages to insist, speak up about churches like this, please. We need Christian voices condemning some of these atrocities within Christianity, please.
And with that,
thanks for your time, David.
Hey, no problem. I always appreciate any time that I can talk to you. It makes my life better, and I think the audience would agree that it makes theirs better too. So until the next time, you will see me in the comments, and in the meantime, I'm out. And take care.